All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, or Cenk's Uygur. All right, you're going to understand what that means a little bit later if you haven't seen the Joe Manchin interview yet. So yes, this morning I interviewed Joe Manchin. We will play a part of that for you in this two-hour extravaganza that we have for you today. You can check out the whole thing on youtube.com/TYTinterviews or just TYT. They're on, that's up on both channels. All right, so I have a hell of a show for you guys today. Donald Trump Jr. In even bigger trouble, now significant legal trouble. We'll give you the updates on that. And then we have a fun little poll. Who is dumber, Donald Trump Sr. or Donald Trump Jr.? So hold for that poll a little bit later in the program. But first, I want to give you all the evidence, including the first story I'm going to do in a second. But also in the second hour for you guys, all the stories are great, but Vegas has run out of pot. I don't want you to freak out, although the state of Nevada is. They have declared a state of emergency. I'm not kidding. Okay, so welcome to the new America, which is kind of awesome. But also, the old America rears its head on the abortion issue. So today, once and for all, I will prove to you guys that the Bible is, in fact, pro-abortion. Okay, we're going to settle it on today's show. So that's in the second hour. All right, so let me get started here with the stories that we got for you. Okay, so President Trump is a goofball. I think that we all know that now. And he's a child, so he will tweet like a child. He will often admit things that he shouldn't admit in tweets, kind of like his son. And he'll end tweets with sad, baby, things along those lines. He will misspell things, he'll get facts horribly wrong. So obviously his staff from time to time makes an effort to take his tweeter away from him, as Rick Perry would say, speaking of unintelligent people. So they are not successful. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it when they try to take away his Twitter machine. So he is talking to Mark Leibovich at New York Times Magazine, and he says, they want to take away my voice. They're not going to take away my social media. First of all, who's they? It's your own guys who are like, Mr. President, I'm sorry, but you're too dumb. And you keep getting yourself in trouble. And you keep admitting things you shouldn't admit. And it's getting all of us in trouble. Please, please put down the Twitter. Right? He's like, no, you can't take that away. I like that one. Sad baby. For the moment being, he does keep his account and he is still tweeting. And I think that that is good news for America. Yes, it makes us look ridiculous because he's now our president, but at least he will probably admit to several different crimes accidentally on Twitter, and it'll help to get him out of office. Mark Leibovich, for his point of view, said, no, I think it leads to better transparency. Sure, of course it does, Mark. It does, that's the one thing it does do. We have better transparency into that mind, whether we like it or not. Whatever that mind shows us. Okay, Leibovich called it far more illuminating. It's true. Okay, now we move forward to very good news. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is the leader of ISIS. Wrong, was the leader of ISIS.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah. It appears that, we didn't get him, the Russians did. But still, the world community has gotten al-Baghdadi. Now, three different sources reporting this. Let me give you what they are. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a reliable monitoring group based in the UK, claims they have seen, quote, confirmed information that ISIS chief Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi has been killed. Mediaite explains the Russian military claimed last month, I should say, that the jihadi leader most likely died after they launched an airstrike against an ISIS gathering near their headquarters in Raqqa. While those reports were never clarified by American intelligence, AFP, which is the main news outlet in France, picked up a statement from SOHR director Rami Abdel Rahman claiming al-Baghdadi's death was confirmed among the ISIS chain of command. Now, I'm going to double down that the American officials have not yet confirmed his death. But today, someone else did, and that was ISIS. ISIS has confirmed that al-Baghdadi has passed away. Now, I had been saying for a long time, unfortunately, our adversary in al-Baghdadi was quite intelligent. And he did things that were bold and actually did play three-dimensional chess to some degree. And that was terrible news, because you don't want an adversary like that. And that is why they were able to grab a huge chunk of land and renewable source of revenue for themselves in both Iraq and Syria, and caused all this damage worldwide. And I said that if he was taken out, likely ISIS would fall into disarray, because there's not a lot of other brilliant Muslim radicals running around. Fundamentalism doesn't often lead itself to great acumen in strategy, skills, and analysis of the facts on the ground. So Baghdadi now, if it is true that he is gone, I think it'll be an enormous setback for ISIS. I cannot overstate how big a setback that'll be. So now it's possible that this is an elaborate ruse by ISIS to pretend that he's dead when he's not, but I don't think the Russians would want to play along with that ruse, let alone the other human rights groups, etc., that are reporting it. So not 100% confirmed yet, but pretty close. And if that's true, that's pretty great news for the world. And you know, I was very frustrated with the CIA, because they do a lot of things wrong, and there are things, some things we need them to do right, such as find al-Baghdadi. Unfortunately, it appears they didn't, the Russians did. But I'll take it either way, and it's good for the world. Now, in other news related to ISIS, they have lost Mosul. That fell very recently to a combination of troops, mainly led by the Iraqi government. But Kurdish Peshmerga and some of our allies, such as they are in Syria, are also now besieging Raqqa, which is inside Syria and is the so-called capital of ISIS. But Mosul was a very important city in Iraq that ISIS had captured. Now the Iraqi government has recaptured it. And American leaders on the ground, military leaders on the ground, saying beseeching basically the Iraqi government to not make the same mistakes that it made in the past, which is to alienate Sunnis in Iraq and not to give them any voice in their government, which then leads to an uprising, which now US military leaders are warning could lead to an ISIS 2.0. So the leader of ISIS is dead, now long live the new leader. According to the reports, ISIS has not picked a new leader yet. But when we were in the old days of killing the number three guy in Al-Qaeda, you remember, or the number two guy, we would kill an endless slew of number two and number three guys in Al-Qaeda, and the problem would never go away, there'd just be a new one. In the case of ISIS, I think killing the number one guy is going to have a big impact. And then afterwards, Trump will take credit and go, see, I told you I'd take care of ISIS. The plan to retake Mosul had nothing to do with Donald Trump. Getting Baghdadi had nothing to do with Donald Trump, but you tried explaining those nuances to his followers once they put on their red hats. I think the red hat signals no thinking allowed here. Okay, hey, look, he's got a black hat. That might have meant the same thing. But in his case, he was unfortunately a smart tactician, but unfortunate for him, that didn't last long. So good news for the world today. Okay. I don't know if as a lib I'm allowed to celebrate anybody's death, but if I am, this is the moment for it. Okay, now let's go to Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos has a brilliant new idea. She's reconsidering some of the policies in the education department, and Title IX guidance on campus rape and sexual assault is among those. And so she's going to meet with some leaders who care about that issue. And she's decided to meet with leaders who also don't care about that issue, or care about it in a different way, where they think it should be de-emphasized. Curious. So let's give you details on those meetings. Think Progress reports, after months of receiving requests for meetings from advocates for sexual assault survivors, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos has finally decided to sit down with them. Good news. But she's also meeting with groups that are critical of Title IX guidance on campus rape, some of which have histories of intimidating rape survivors and dismissing domestic abuse against women. Now, I'm sure that they would disagree with that characterization, but let me give you some of the details and you make up your own mind. The department reached out to National Coalition for Men, SAVE, that's Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, and Families Advocating for Campus Equality. Now, some of those groups sound reasonable. I mean, why wouldn't you want campus equality? Certainly progressives would. And some of what they do is not outrageous. So if someone has been falsely accused of rape, protecting that person is a good thing. And no one wants false accusations of anything, let alone something as important as rape. Now, the reality is that that does not happen very often. I'm going to give you the stats on it a little bit later. And there's a good argument to be made that some of these groups are not worried about just protecting innocent victims of false accusations, but think that the issues of campus rape and sexual assault are a little overdone. Okay, so let's dive into the details and figure it out together. The National Coalition for Men, which was founded in the 1970s, has a long history of what is known as men's rights activism. One of the group's chapters published the photos and names of women while calling them false accusers. Now, there, if it turns out that the whole thing was adjudicated and they went to court and it was shown that they are in fact false accusers, okay, I'm more worried about the guys who are falsely accused and you wanted to have some protections for them, that's great. But publishing the pictures of those women, I don't know how necessary it is or how helpful it is, but you can make a case for it. I wouldn't do it. It's not a close case for me. But if you're in that group, I guess I get it. But did you really make sure that those were all adjudicated, or did you start putting up pictures of women who had rape accusations, some of which might have been true, and then you put their picture up as, false accusers? I mean, if you're going to go down that road, which I would never go down because I think it's a dangerous and bad idea, you better make sure that you come correct. And are you sure the National Coalition for Men has made absolutely sure that all these cases are adjudicated? Let me assure you that I am not positive about that. And look, the men's rights movement, I'm a man, right? So why would I be against men's rights? Because I'm not against men's rights, nobody is. Men already have a lot of rights. So see, the way that it worked was we had all the rights in the beginning, and then eventually it spread out to more and more people. In fact, it was, of course, as you know, propertied white men and then non-propertied white men, and the list goes on and on of the people who got rights. So it's not like men needed someone to protect them because, oh my gosh, they've been discriminated against for such a long time. Now, if the pendulum swung too far and you could show a couple of cases here, in this divorce proceeding, you see how it is no longer equal, okay, that's a good conversation to have. And I've had that conversation. And as it turns out, men's rights groups don't really stop there. The more you get in the weeds, the uglier it gets. And talking about how women had this coming and that coming, and they've been taking away our rights forever. Taking away your rights? No, you have to show very specific examples. Otherwise, you're the ones who started with all the rights in the first place, and that includes me. Just read history, any history, but obviously some people are not enamored with facts. So now let's get to some of the other groups. In 2012, the group, let me make sure that I've got the right group here. This is referring still to the National Coalition for Men. Okay, in 2012, the group supported the Republican House version of the Violence Against Women Act, which removed protections for LGBTQ people in crisis centers. The group has been very litigious when it notices events specifically designated as for women. Its members sued a strip club for letting women in for free during its ladies' night, and sued a company called Chick CEO for not letting men into a women's networking event. Look, I'm not sure I want to bust into a women's networking event, but if you thought that the CEO of that company and all the executives were women and men did not have a right, did not have a good way to advance in that company, as women have had that problem in many industries for a long, long time, but it happened in that particular case and you want to pursue that, I understand. You'll have to prove your case in court, etc. But now we're getting into suing strip clubs for ladies' nights? I mean, my conservative friends, wouldn't you call that a snowflake? Like, you were so bothered that you couldn't get free night at the strip club and they only had it for ladies. Now, you don't see the logic in that? And you say, oh no, I gotta have equality at the strip club. men have never had equality in strip clubs, and now we need equality. You see, when you make a case like that, it makes everybody think you're a jackass. Okay, certainly makes me think that, and I suspect a large portion of the audience. But actually, the one that's most harmful is going after LGBTQ rights. If you're for men, why do you care? Gay men, straight men. I thought you were for equality. All of a sudden, it looks like you're not for equality, and so you've got other agendas. So now let's look at the reality of the stats here. Researchers estimate that somewhere between 2 and 10% of rape allegations are false. But even among those who are falsely accused, it's rare for men to end up in prison as a result. So that doesn't mean that if you're in that 2 to 10% that what happened to you isn't outrageous. It is, man. Being falsely accused of rape is a terrible, terrible thing. But is it an overwhelming problem that needs to be addressed at the same level as actual rape and sexual assault? Well, I want the appropriate resource to go into both problems, but appropriate also means proportionate. So if you call that 50-50, then the stats don't back it up. In fact, let me give you the other side. For students who are found responsible for sexual assault, only 30% were actually expelled, according to a 2014 Huffington Post analysis of data from over 100 schools. So you have a huge problem of campus rape and sexual assault, and most of the people who do it unfortunately get away with it. And there's not enough resources to track down and make sure that there's justice in that system. On the other hand, you have a small percentage of people who are falsely accused of rape, and they hardly ever actually go to court and go to prison. So it doesn't make the individual cases any less unjust, but is that the same scope of problem as the sexual assault in the first place? No, the numbers show you that it is not. So just have a sense of proportion here. Now we go to the National Coalition for Men president. That's Harry Crouch, president of National Coalition for Men. He has also vocally blamed survivors for the abuse they faced. In a 2014 interview with Pacific Standard, Crouch defended Ray Rice, a former football player who was indicted in 2014 on third-degree aggravated assault for an incident involving his then fiance. Now, before I go to his defense, you guys remember that incident? And we showed the video here. I don't want to keep re-showing it, but he knocks out his fiance. At the time, they were fiance. Now they're married. And it is a brutal looking video. And then he drags her out of the elevator, leaves her shoe there. After he knocks her out, he doesn't even look at her for a long time. I mean, it is stomach turning violence. But no, Harry Crouch's vision of that or perspective on that was vastly different. He said, I'm not saying he's a good guy, but if she hadn't aggravated him, she wouldn't have been hit. They would say that's blaming the victim, but I don't buy it. What's there not to buy? I mean, you could disagree on what happened, although the videotape is incredibly clear. But when you say she aggravated him, you're blaming the victim. There's nothing to buy or not buy. You could say you're justified in blaming the victim. You would be among a really, really small minority of people who think that. But you can't say you didn't blame the victim because you just blamed the victim. So when you, the more you get in the weeds, the more you get a sense of where these guys are actually going. And it is not good news, man. It's in a really, really bad direction. So now our education secretary is like, oh yes, 50-50. I meet with people who suffered rape and sexual assault and the people who care about them. And I meet with people who think that that is a made up issue and that they kind of had it coming a little bit sometimes in some assault cases. Okay. Well, when you look into the history of Betsy DeVos, you realize that this, we shouldn't be surprised by this, why we fought her. Because we didn't think she was right for that role. Well, it turns out the Dick and Betsy DeVos Family Foundation made donations totaling $25,000 to foundations for individual rights and education, which has shared articles dismissive of sexual assault survivors. One read, unfortunately, much of the feminist war on rape has conflated sexual assault with muddled, often alcohol-fueled sexual encounters that involve miscommunication. You call it rape, I call it miscommunication. They gave money to that cause. So now are you surprised that Betsy DeVos is meeting with people who are for men's rights to protect men from the miscommunication that happens when they're in what they admit are alcohol fueled sexual encounters? Look, people being drunk and having sex old as time. when someone is knocked out unconscious from drinking, yes, that's rape. And that is not a 50-50 question. That is a legal question and it is settled. The fact that we are now relitigating this at the Department of Education is horrific. Okay, we gotta take a break. When we come back, the Trump Jr. saga. Oh, Fredo, what have you done? All right, back on the Young Turks. I don't have time for emails. Let me just read you one. Lauren says, I don't know what we'll do if Donnie Tiny Hands stops treating Twitter like it's his diary. Dear diary, today I met Vlad. Sigh. Second one. Mariah Hayashi says, let's see if Donald Trump tries to take credit for the death of the ISIS leader. Are you kidding me? Of course! Of course he's going to take credit for it. I'm shocked he hasn't yet. He just sent out one tweet about ISIS not doing well. We've got big wins against ISIS. So believe me, that kind of nonsense coming in a little bit. Count out to it. Okay. Let's go to the big story here about Donald Trump Jr. Yesterday we reported to you that Donald Trump Jr. Had a meeting with a lawyer that was connected to the Kremlin. And he did something strange. He kind of admitted that he was looking for information about Hillary Clinton's campaign. But if you're getting it from a foreign source, that might be illegal. And especially if it's stolen, that would be a different crime and open yourself up to a lot of issues. But today we found out what those contacts actually were. And that's because Donald Trump Jr. himself released those emails. Whoa, that's really interesting. He said to everyone, in order to be totally transparent, I'm releasing the entire email chain of my emails. So, well, you might look at that and go, well, I guess he's got nothing to hide. You'd be wrong. Because it turns out he shouldn't have released these emails. Now, he didn't do it voluntarily. Right now, the Trump administration is all over TV going, he's totally transparent. Did it on just out of the goodness of his heart. No, the New York Times already had the emails. They were already printing a story about it. And they said, look, here's what your emails say. Is it true or not true? This is after he first denied that he ever had the meeting. Then the second line was, oh, it was just about adoption. And then when he found out, oh, shoot, they know what the meeting was about. He's like, fine, I was trying to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. But there's nothing wrong with that. That's not true. There is something wrong with that. Now, finally, he's like, nah, all right, here's the emails. Now, remember yesterday he tweeted out, obviously, I'm the first person on a campaign to ever take a meeting to hear info about an opponent. Went nowhere, but had to listen. See, you schmuck, you're not supposed to admit that. Yes. You can go and try to get opposition research on people. Of course, that's a normal part of a campaign, but not from a foreign source. And on top of that, one that, how else would they have gotten it but stealing it? So, and it is not normal procedure. For example, Al Gore's team in 2000 got mailed a tape of George Bush's practice for the debates. They had the whole thing and they could have looked at it. I mean, that's beautiful opposition research. And prepared better for the debate. Well, they didn't, because they thought this must be stolen, so they turn it over to the FBI. That's how you're supposed to deal with stolen material, or things that you reasonably believe could have been stolen. Instead, fools rush in, or in this case, fools Russian. Anyway, he's like, oh, you got good stuff from the Russians? All right, let's do it. Hey, don't take my word for it, I'm about to read you his emails. Okay, so the guy who's the intermediary here is a guy named Rob Goldstone. He lives in the UK. He helped with a Miss Universe pageant, and he hooked up Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. with some of his Russian contacts before. And that is exactly who he's going to refer to here. It is a family that's very well connected in Russia. The son is the pop singer, and then the dad in that family is a real estate mogul. So the son's name is Emin Agalarov, and then his dad's name is Aras, I believe. So that's your context for these emails. So Goldstone emails Donald Trump Jr. and says, Emin, the pop star guy, the younger guy, just called and asked me to contact you with something very interesting. The Crown Prosecutor of Russia met with his father, Aras, there it is, this morning, and their meeting offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father. Now, Rob Goldstone, also a clown, of course, he deals with the Trump family. So there is no such thing as the Crown Prosecutor of Russia. There is a title that's similar to that in the UK. That's why he assumed that that's what it was called in Russia. It's not called that. But that is not relevant. What he's saying to Donald Trump Jr. is, I've got the top prosecutor in Russia who's going to give you official documents that the Russians have. Any person that has any sense, I mean, let's put aside morality for a second, but and also doesn't want to break the law, would immediately go, wait, I am not going to take information from the Russians on my opponent that is potentially very illegal and obviously not the right thing to do. Let me go turn this in. Don goes, that sounds great. Okay, so hold for that. Goldstone further clarifies, this would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Now, I know there's still some out there who are like, there's no evidence that it was connected to Russia, except for the fact that he just said, it is connected to Russia and it's to help your father. But hold, let's be fair to Donald Trump Jr. Those are just emails he received. What did he reply back? Quote, if it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer. Oops, there you go. So here is Donald Trump Jr. saying, if you have official documents from the Russians, I would like to collude with you. And it is to help my Trump with my father's campaign, as you wrote in the email. If it is as you say in the email, I would love it. Does it have to get any clearer? Like if they were trying to frame themselves, they couldn't have made it any clearer. Right? What did I tell you as to why the whole Trump clan was going to get caught? Because they're too stupid to do a cover up. I mean, who writes emails like this? Like, would you like to meet with the Russians and take their documents, the God knows where they got them, and use it against Hillary Clinton to help your father? Why, yes, I would. Okay. Now, whether that collusion is illegal is a question we're going to get to in a second, but it is collusion. There is no question about that. So, Goldstone also wrote in one of the emails, Don, hope all is well with Emin, the guy we were talking about before. Emin asked that I schedule a meeting with you and the Russian government attorney who's flying over from Moscow for this Thursday. I believe you are aware of this meeting and so wondered if 3 p.m. or later on Thursday works for you. I mean, you can't write it up any better. Remember, Don, it's a Russian government lawyer and I know you are aware of this meeting. And of course, Trump Jr. responds, yes, but can we make it 4 o'clock? Jesus, man. So now they're saying, oh, maybe the Democrats set us up. So let me get this right. The Democrats are playing three-dimensional chess so that they would lose the election? Well, with knowing the Democrats, maybe they are. Okay, that's the, only the Democrats would do that. But even so, if they were, hey, you schmuck, don't say yes, I would love to do something illegal. So is it illegal? Well, Richard Painter, former ethics lawyer for George W. Bush, said if he intended to get illegally stolen private information from the Russians, it was illegal for him to attempt to do so, just like buying stolen goods from a known fence. Now, in this case, his main defense, which is not a defense at all, is, well, I thought it was a Russian government lawyer and I thought they were going to give me really good opposition research on my opponent and help meddle in this election, but as it turned out, they didn't have really good information for me, so I was annoyed at the meeting because it turns out she just wanted to talk about policy and we weren't talking about policy at that point. That didn't make it any better, it might have made it worse. Right? Say, no, I was only interested in like the incriminating stuff. Policy, I wasn't there for a policy meeting. Okay, so now will they be able to prove in court that he had the intent to receive stolen goods and that he involved Jared Kushner, who was also at the meeting, and Paul Manafort, who was the campaign manager for Trump at that time, and whether that you could prove all three of them had the intent to receive stolen goods? That's a good open question. We'll see you in court and try to figure it out. You know what comes before court though? Handcuffs. Anyway, now there's a second legal problem that he has with this. Rick Hassan, who's an election law expert, says there's two big questions on whether he broke campaign finance laws are knowledge. It was that it was a foreign source, and they explain now credible if last night's New York Times story is correct, as well as if the information being provided counts as anything of value for purposes of the law. So let me explain that. So did he know that it was a foreign source? Now there's no question because he himself has admitted, yes, these are the emails, I knew that it was a Russian foreign source. So check on the first part of the test. The second part of the test is not whether the incriminating information that he received was great and was used against Hillary Clinton. No, the question is it anything of value, meaning is it worth anything? Does it have monetary value? Okay, so well, again, even if you weren't clear on where the sources, again, the email from Goldstone said this is obviously very high level sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government support of Mr. Trump. And of course, Donald Trump Jr. famously replied, I love it, to that email. Now, on to whether just giving information has monetary value. Well, it depends on the kind of information. If you could Google it on your own, no, that has no monetary value. But if it is other kinds of information, we already have rulings on that. There's a 1990 ruling by the Federal Election Commission, and it reads like this, and I'll read it to you and then I'll explain. They explain that in that case, if however Mr. Hochberg imparts poll result information to you or anyone else working for your campaign, including any data or any analysis of the results, or if he uses the poll information to advise your campaign on matters such as campaign strategy or creating media messages, such poll information will constitute an in-kind contribution from Mr. Hochberg to your campaign and an expenditure in an equal amount by your committee. Meaning, look, he spent money on that poll. If he gives you the information from that poll that he spent money on, that is a contribution to your campaign. So if in this particular case, if the Russians were going to give you information and you thought they were going to give you information that they spent money acquiring, and presumably they would have had to spend some sort of money, either bribing someone on the inside or paying hackers, etc. Well, then you got information that has value and you have broken a campaign finance law. So look, you might look at all that and say, when you go to court, you got a good case, but you're really going to have to lay out here intent and what Trump knew and didn't know. But boy, did he help your case by releasing the emails and admitting himself that yes, I went to go meet with people I thought were Russian officials to get stuff that would help our campaign, but as it turns out, I couldn't finish the criminal act. He didn't say it in that last part, he didn't say in so many words, so I just want to be clear about that. Basically, but it turns out you don't need to finish it for it to be a criminal act. Anyway, I am very much looking forward to a judge sorting this out. What do you think? Does he look better in orange, or do we go classic? You know, make America great again and go with the white and black stripes for the prison outfit. Look, if he was a regular person, one of you guys out there, you think you would be get arrested for this? Of course! The only reason you wouldn't arrest somebody with this amount of overwhelming evidence that they handed you on a silver platter is if they have a silver spoon in their mouth. And you go, I mean, my daddy's president, can't I just get away with illegal stuff? The answer to that is supposed to be no in a democracy. We'll find out what the real answer is in a little bit, apparently. Okay, so that's the essence of the story. Now, let's have some fun, okay? I'm already having fun. Okay. So Donald Trump Jr., now we know, met with people he believed to be Russian government officials who were going to give him official documents, and said he was really looking forward to that meeting, that he would love it. But at the time, he had claimed that, oh my God, these allegations that we would meet with the Russians is outrageous. Hold for it, because I'm going to show you the video. Now, this video comes more than a month after he had already met with the Russian lawyer. He already knows he met with the Russians, and it's not just him. Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, was at the meeting. Jared Kushner, who's now a top advisor to the president, was at the meeting, a top advisor to the president as he was running his campaign at the time, when he was candidate Trump. So you've got three big honchos of the campaign that met with the Russians. Donald Trump Jr. already knows that, and now we know it as a fact. Nonetheless, he goes on television, has this interview with Jake Tapper. Now listen to how many times he pretends to be outraged and calls these allegations absolute lies. Here, let's begin.
He suggested that experts are saying that Russians were behind both the leak, the hacking of the DNC emails and their release. He seemed to be suggesting that this is part of a plot to help Donald Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton. Your response?
Well, it just goes to show you their exact moral compass. I mean, they'll say anything to be able to win this.
Russian collusion in order to hurt Hillary? They'll say anything to be able to win this. Rob Goldstone email. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government's support of Mr. Trump. Response by Donald Trump Jr. I love it. That is before he did the interview. I'm not anywhere near done. Here's another one.
I mean, this is time and time again, lie after lie.
Lie after lie, us meeting with the Russians. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government's support of Mr. Trump. I love it. Keep it going.
You know, his house cat at home once said that this is what's happening with the Russians. It's disgusting. It's so phony.
It's so phony. It's disgusting. The idea that we would meet with Russians. Goldstone, this is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump Jr., I love it. Keep it going.
I watched him bumble through the interview. I was able to hear it on audio a little bit. I mean, I can't think of bigger lies.
Can't think of a bigger lie. Rob Goldstone, this is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but it's part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. I love it. To say that we would work with the Russians, I can't think of a bigger lie. I can think of a bigger lie. Maybe the one you're telling right now. I'm not done. Keep it going.
That exactly goes to show you what the DNC and what the Clinton camp will do. They will lie and do anything to win.
They will lie and do anything to win. Rob Goldstone, this is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump Jr., I love it. I will do anything to win. You've got secret information that the Russians have. I will work with our adversaries. I will take however they procure that information, stolen or otherwise, and I will use it in my campaign. Can you believe what they would do to win an election and the lies they would tell? Keep it going.
It's a rigged system. It's disgusting, and the people should be fed up, because when I heard it, I certainly was.
He was just fed up with it. What a rigged system he's got. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but it's part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. I love it. I think I have one more.
I don't mind a fair fight, but these lies and the perpetuating of that kind of nonsense to try to, you know, gain some political capital is just outrageous, and he should be ashamed of himself.
Outrageous should be ashamed of himself. Email sent to Donald Trump Jr. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump Jr., I love it. I believe that is working with the Russians. And certainly, Donald Trump Jr. had every intention to meet with the Russians to get whatever information they had from about Hillary Clinton, from whatever sources and however they procured that. And he would go to any lengths to win, legal or not. And that's not me saying it, that's him saying it in emails he released himself, saying he loved the idea of working with the Russians to get Hillary Clinton, no matter how they got the information. And then he goes on television going, the idea that we would meet with Russians and collude with them to get information about Hillary Clinton, it is so phony and disgusting. How dare they? Well, we now have an excellent idea of who is in fact phony and disgusting. We'll be right back. Back on the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. So finally, we're going to find out maybe Cenk's. So Michael Napin writes in, with all this happening, Democrats will still lose 2018 and 2020. Left to their own devices, I'm afraid they would. Luckily, they won't be left to their own devices. Go to justicedemocrats.com/win and let's show them how to do it right. Ben Peck writes in, I understand why Trump looks at Ivanka as a smart kid, or more accurately, the dumb one. Ben, actually, I've been saying that for a long time. I said, look, if these two knuckleheads, Beavis and Butthead, I mean Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, got outshined by their sister, knowing what Donald Trump thinks about women in general, oh man, he named a kid Donald Trump Jr. and he still won't trust him with anything, right? His sister, who's constantly getting all the roles on Apprentice, the better jobs, hey, I'm going to the White House, this is really important, I can't bring the knucklehead, I'm going to bring Ivanka, right? Even Donald Trump thought he was stupid. That's how stupid he is. All right, anyway, Matthews presumably writes in, the answer in a democracy is he would be arrested. We are finding out now if we are in a democracy based on if he gets arrested. So good point there. Hashtag TYT live to talk to us during the show. The show is live 6 to 8 p.m. on tytnetwork.com. Okay, so now speaking of which, let's go to Donald Trump Sr., okay? So Donald Trump Jr. now has admitted through his emails, publishing his emails, that a friend of his reached out to get him to meet with Russian government officials, as the email stated, and Donald Trump Jr. said, I love it, in order to get information about Hillary Clinton. Now, I want to give you a quick timeline here, and then I'm going to show you a video of what Donald Trump Sr. knew. So June 3rd, 2016 is when Donald Trump Jr. receives the first email. On June 7th, Trump Sr. promises a big speech about Hillary Clinton. I'm going to show you that video in a second. And then on June 9th, Trump Jr. meets with a Russian lawyer. Now, when Trump Jr. meets with a Russian lawyer, he finds out that she really didn't have any incriminating evidence on Hillary Clinton. She wanted to talk about policy, according to Donald Trump Jr. And so he was not interested in it. He was looking for incriminating evidence about Hillary Clinton. That is what he thought he was going to get on the 3rd. Now let's go to the speech that Donald Trump gave between the 3rd and the 9th. So that's he, and we'll get a sense of whether he knew that some people in his campaign, including his campaign manager Paul Manafort, were going to go have that meeting with the Russian lawyers where they thought they were going to get really good stuff on Hillary Clinton. And this is before they found out that they didn't get it. So watch what he says.
I am going to give a major speech on probably Monday of next week, and we're going to be discussing all of the things that have taken place with the Clintons. I think you're going to find it very informative and very, very interesting.
So probably on Monday, depending on how the meeting goes with Junior and Manafort and Kushner, right? So we're going to tell you all the things that happened to Hillary Clinton. Later, we would find out that they didn't really have any of those incriminating information because they were counting on the Russians giving it to them. Now, that was, by the way, before the email leaks. So that meeting didn't prove to be fruitful, but later the Russians apparently did have DNC emails and just leaked them to the public. And so they wound up getting some incriminating information about Hillary Clinton after all, but it was done not through that meeting, but through public revelations. So now, that is just one piece of evidence as to what Donald Trump Sr. might have known. You would probably need more evidence than that, but it is an interesting data point. Okay, that's all. We'll let you start making the judgments on your own, and then one day maybe Robert Mueller will get to make those judgments, and then a judge. Okay, so now we're moving forward. Oh, good, good, good. Nice, nice. I love that graphic. Okay. Okay. So, Donald Trump Jr., Donald Trump Sr. Well, it is a tough question as to who's got more issues with intelligence. Let's put it that way. Although the graphic puts it a little harsher. And so will our poll in a second, so hold for that. But to give you the context, now you know all the crazy things that Donald Trump Sr. has said. That make you question his intelligence. Things like, nobody knew healthcare was this complicated. Nobody knew it. I just discovered it. And nobody knew North Korea was complicated. No, you schmuck, we all knew it was complicated. Let alone the third grade reading level that he has, let alone the fact that now they've got his presidential daily briefings not just down to a page, they had it up with a page with pictures and graphs. Now it's down to tweet length explanations for him. So that's the dad. On the other hand, we have the son, and we found out the son stumbled, bumbled into a meeting with the Russians, going, oh yeah, I'd love to get secret information that the Russian government has and use it in the campaign. Right? So now, let's find out if White House officials are frustrated by that. So they talked to the Daily Beast, and they said, this is the sum of all fear stuff. It's what we've all been dreading. Now, they've been dreading it for a number of reasons. One, because maybe some of them already knew that they had colluded with the Russians. And maybe it's because they knew they had a time bomb, an intellectual time bomb with Donald Trump Jr. on their hands. So here are some devastating quotes. The series of revelations surrounding Trump Jr.'s communications with Russian officials have damaged his standing within the president's political inner circle. Now that is an understatement, given what comes next. As the Daily Beast reported on Sunday, opinion of Trump's eldest son among some of Trump's senior aides, both past and present, is vanishingly low. So their opinion of him is already vanishingly low, barely exists. This made it even worse. Okay. Since the campaign, a popular behind his back nickname from Trump Jr. among three advisors has been Fredo, referring to Fredo Corleone, the insecure and weak failure of a son in the Godfather series, who ends up causing major damage to the family. Ah, Fredo indeed. Okay, those are not my words, those are people that work for Donald Trump inside the White House. Okay, they say over the past week, one senior White House official and a former top Trump campaign aide both independently and bluntly described the president's son as an idiot. I can't get enough of this story. All right, so by the way, they noted while they wrote that article, as of noon Tuesday, he had yet to tweet out, Donald Trump Sr. had yet to tweet out a single defense of his eldest son. And it's not like he's shy about tweeting, and in that time he'd been tweeting about many things. Finally, a tweet arrived, or a statement arrived from Donald Trump Sr. Saying, my son is a high quality person, and I applaud his transparency. So nothing defending him on the Russian allegations at all. And that is not a usual Donald Trump tweet. Usually it comes in with, oh, everybody else is sad and they're all babies and everything is phony and fake and my son is awesome and he's the smartest guy. No, no, no. Somebody wrote this for him, and it's, boy, it is a really weak defense, which is, he's high quality and at least he's transparent. It's almost a way of saying, at least we now all know how stupid he is. It used to just be a family secret. Okay, so with that background, we bring you a very important poll at the Young Turks. Who is dumber, Donald Trump or Donald Trump Jr.? So go to tytnetwork.com/stupid. And this is not an easy contest, man. I know the young son's a knucklehead, and he's so stupid, his dad thinks he's stupid. Okay. On the other hand, it is hard to get less bright than Donald Trump. So, oof, this is going to be the thriller in Manila. Okay. They probably both think, oh, why? Are we going to be fighting inside an envelope? By the way, we had to use tytnetwork.com/stupid because we've already done a version of this poll. Who's dumber, Donald Trump or George W. Bush? That one was tytnetwork.com/dumb. By the way, the results are overwhelming. Over 21,000 people voted in that poll. The poll is still up. You can still vote. Maybe you can swing these results. But for the moment being, 79.8% of people saying, no, Trump is even dumber than Bush. Bush, I remember when you were the standard bearer for stupid. It's been a long time, and a whole new group of Republicans have come in to replace you. Now it's senior versus junior. Can't wait to see how this turns out. Can't wait. tytnetwork.com/stupid and dumb. Go ahead, vote on both. All right. So I have one last story related to all of this, and that's we go to Yoho, okay? Representative Ted Yoho, not one of the brightest bulbs in Congress. He said many outrageous and silly things in the past. He's a Republican from Florida. He's going to try to add to that pantheon of ill-advised commentary by weighing in on this Donald Trump Jr. controversy. Let's watch.
You believe it was appropriate for Donald Trump Jr. to take a meeting with a Russian national who promised to provide damaging information to him and his associates involving Hillary Clinton?
Do I think it's appropriate? I think I probably would have done the same thing. I mean, it's opposition research, and you know, anybody that's been in an election, you're always looking to get the upper hand. You know, keep in mind, she wasn't an official for the Russian government the way I understand it. She's a lawyer, a Russian lawyer. And if somebody comes to us and says, hey, we've got information on an opponent, yeah, I think that's an appropriate thing to do.
Just a side note here on how funny Wolf Blitzer is. He's like, oh, I'd have done the same thing. It's totally illegal. And Wolf's like, like a little reaction, like, really? You would have done the same thing? Anyway, so yes, if you take anything of value from a foreign source during a campaign, that is illegal. Now, unless the Russians came to him with, like, oh, I don't know, we Googled it. Googling it is free. You could have Googled it too. And here's the stuff we have on Hillary Clinton, old articles from the New York Times. That would not have been illegal because that they can get for free on Google. But anything that else where they would have to spend money to procure information on Hillary Clinton, if it is handed over to them from a foreign source, yes, would be illegal and going to get, and let alone if they thought it was stolen, then it breaks several different laws. And Yoho comes in here and goes, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Somebody came to me with Oppo research and they were the Russians, I'd have taken it. Okay, it's okay to do opposition research. That is very normal. It is not normal to get it from an outside source like a foreign country. That is not normal, it is not acceptable, and it is not legal. And he says, well, I understand that she turned out to be not connected to Russians. Actually, she is connected to a lot of the people in the higher ups connected to Putin. But at the time, in the emails, Goldstone tells Donald Trump Jr. she is with the Russian government. He says, I love it. That intent is more important than what she actually wound up giving to him. All right, one more from Yoho.
If someone like that, a foreign national, came to an American with obviously close contacts to the then soon to be Republican presidential nominee, that person should have contacted the FBI about that information. Do you think that was necessary?
I think probably going forward, that may be what happens, especially in this case where Donald Trump's the president now. But going back, you have to put yourself back at that time frame. You know, at that time frame, I think it's perfectly appropriate for what he did.
In other words, we didn't think he was really going to win. And so they're just trying like hell to win. And you know, you break a couple of laws when you're running for president. Is that a big deal? And then once you're president, I guess you shouldn't continue to break the law. Wow. Thank you, legal expert Ted Yoho. But another aside, I can't help myself. Has Wolf Blitzer ever shown any emotion? Ever? Okay. Well, shouldn't they have turned it into the FBI? Anyways, by the way, the correct answer is yes, they should have turned it into the FBI. When the Gore campaign got a tape of Bush debate prep, they believed that it was stolen from Bush headquarters. They didn't go like Ted Yoho and go like, hey, look at our luck. And hey, we're in the middle of a campaign, we got to win, man. Let's just break the law and just use the stolen stuff, right? No, they turned it over to the FBI like you're supposed to. But Yoho, I mean, putting aside the goofiness and things he shouldn't be saying on TV, is a decent representative of the Republican philosophy, which is win at all costs by any means necessary, and we'll sort it out later. One side plays like that, and the other side plays patty cakes. Gee, I wonder why the Republicans are routing the Democrats. And whenever the Democrats are in charge, do they ever have consequences for all the law breaking that the Republicans do? No, they just go, oh, we won't look backward, we'll look forward. Well, you know what you'll see when you look forward? This kind of cheating and another ass kicking delivered to you. So if you never punish people for breaking the law, guess what they'll do? They'll keep breaking the law. Okay, now finally to Manchin. Okay. So this morning I interviewed Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and we had a very full conversation about a lot of the issues, including the minimum wage, legalization of drugs, campaign finance reform, Medicare for all. So please check it out. It's on youtube.com/TYT. But I wanted to give you one snippet of it here because I thought what he said was very interesting. And I was surprised by it. It was unexpected to me. I asked him about his donors. Let's begin to watch that portion of the interview.
You voted to repeal the stream protection rule. And your top donor is First Energy that wound up getting in some degree of trouble for putting arsenic in a pond. It seems like they would benefit from the repeal of that regulation. So did that have anything to do with your vote?
No. Jenks, I know it's hard to believe, and I know it's hard for people to. I don't have any idea who gives me money. I don't solicit from the standpoint that you do this for me. Quid pro quo, that's never been me. That's not my political mantra at all.
So, okay, quid pro quo, I understand as I'm about to explain there, but you don't know who your donors are. Curious, let's keep going. Senator Manchin, I want to show you a graphic here, graphic one, and then if we can, two as well. But let's start with one. This is the list of your top donors. I thought you said that you don't, I understand that you said you don't do quid pro quo. That was clear.
Yeah.
But you know who your top donors are, right?
I do not.
You don't know who your top donors are?
I do not. You're showing me something I've never seen.
Okay, so this is from Open Secrets.
I know you have, Jenks, I know that it's hard for anyone to believe. I do not. I never have.
Okay. Well, I gotta be honest, Senator Manchin, that is hard to believe. And the reaction so far online to that has been, suffice it to say, that the audience also finds it hard to believe. Now, it might be that you know he doesn't know their specific names. I can't even say it. So because you had to go to fundraisers, right? Didn't you? All those people that you got donations from, you never figured out who they were from. They never told you where they were from, or they told you, but you immediately forgot. And campaign donations are a huge part of why you think you've got an advantage and how Washington thinks overall, who's got more money, who's more likely to win. And by the way, that's the reality too. Unfortunately, and that's why you need campaign finance reform. Whoever has more money has a 95% chance of winning in congressional elections. So if he doesn't know who his donors are, well, he might be getting a call from them today saying, wait a minute, did I just give you all that money and you're telling me you don't even know who I am? Okay, so that's not normally how it works, but let's keep going.
Your small individual contributions make up only 1% of the money coming in from 2013 to 2018 into your campaigns. So 99% big money, 1% small money. So I wonder if you're for getting big money out of politics. It's a literal question. Or do you think the current system is fine?
Oh, the current system is not fine. The current system has destroyed the politics or the government as we know how we go through this process of electing people. The dark money coming in is horrible. That's not the money the candidates run. Forget about that, Jenks. That money's not going to make a difference in who wins and who loses. It's the dark money coming in that we have no control whatsoever. Citizens United is absolutely destroying our country. And it should be outlawed. It should be done away with. It should have never come into being.
So do you think there should be public financing instead of private financing of elections?
I tried public finance when I was governor of West Virginia and supported it. Absolutely.
Would you be in favor of an amendment to get money out of politics?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You talk about money being the root of all evils. In politics, it's destroying politics as we know it.
Well, that's great news. I didn't know that he was in favor of that in that sense. Look, there's this part that I disagree with him there, which is I think the money they directly contribute to politicians is also a problem. Yes, the dark money is a huge problem because they don't know where it's coming from, but the money where we know where it's coming from is also a problem. Yeah, okay, it's coming from the Koch brothers. And then you wind up doing things that help the Koch brothers. I don't mean Senator Manchin himself, although he was part of ALEC, and that is, it's a group that where they write legislation for conservative lawmakers and funded by corporations. So you know where it's coming from in that sense, and you know the results of what ALEC pushes for, which is the pro-corporate policies that help their donors. So I'm worried about the dark money and the money where we can see where it's coming from. I'm worried about both of it. But the fact that he wants to do something about it, if you take him at his word at that, that's good news. So let's dive one last bit here into how he wants to deal with money in politics in his campaign and find that out.
One way to go is how your primary opponent, Paula Jean Swearengin, is going, which is to say, I'm going to forsake the big money overall. I'm just only going to take small money contributions. Have you considered that for yourself, Senator Manchin?
I haven't been in control of the money from we go out and campaign and we go out for solicitation like every other competitive campaign. And we're going online. I've not been online, so I need to get online to get more of the individual contributions. I'm very appreciative from a dollar on up. And in the state, it's $1,000, but in a U.S. Senate or the congressional, it's $2,700 per person is the top amount per cycle. And there's not many people in West Virginia that can do anywhere near that.
Senator, you know,
people basically they give what they desire to give.
So no, he will not be forsaking big donor money for now. Check out the rest of the interview. Lots of interesting answers in there. Get a much better sense of who Senator Manchin is. And I asked him about not only the policies, but different parts of his record and how he feels about progressives, Bernie Sanders, etc. So youtube.com/TYT. We'll put a link down below as well. But his answer on whether he knows who his donors are and whether that affects him. Well, you have the answer. What you do with that answer and how much you believe it is up to you. All right, now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some of the earlier stories that I promised you, including once and for all showing you that the Bible and presumably hence God is pro-abortion.